둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
To add me again. There we go. I'm so excited. We're back.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out the series. Of course, you know what to do. If you like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. A great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can do so at any of the usual places that you grab podcasts. That includes a Spotify and Apple podcast at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And in fact, if you head over to Apple Podcasts, you can help us out quite a bit. We need you to over at Apple Podcasts, hit the follow button, leave us a review over there. Not only is it a quick, easy way to show your support, but it'll also give you a chance to win exclusive Consequence merch. So just head to the link in the show notes and then submit your info along with a screenshot of your review, and we'll be shouting out our winners all December. So make sure to follow and review soon. And of course, thanks for all your support in helping the Kyle Meredith With podcast grow. And if you need more incentive, just think of who you'll hear, such as some of my recent guests, like actress Shelley Hennig from Netflix's Obliterated. I had director Mick G on to talk about Family Switch, that movie. We had the band X Ambassadors, Chicago, Mike Mills of REM, the cast of Goosebumps. The director of the new Hunger Games prequel, Francis Lawrence, also talked to Neil deGrasse Tyson. Dolly Parton was here, Rufus Wainwright, Gavin Rosdell of Bush, Johnny Marr, Everclear, Paul Rogers of Bad Company. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, I get to catch up with Kate Siegel. The actress is back. She's one of my favorite actresses, and she's in the new Netflix miniseries, The Fall of the House of Usher. Once again, with Mike Flanagan creating this one, loosely based on various works by Edgar Allan Poe, and tells the downfall of a family, a corrupt pharmaceutical company, and a mysterious woman plaguing the characters as they disappear one by one. Now, alongside Kate, the ensemble cast includes a lot of Flanagan regulars like Carla Gugino and Henry Thomas, but also welcomes Bruce Greenwood, Mary McDonald, and Mark Hamill to the cast. So we're going to be talking about that. Kate's going to take us through the necessity of pain, as she says, that weaves its way throughout the story, basing her look off of Mirage from The Incredibles, and finding the mood of Camille through Doja Cat's Won't Bite. In fact, that's something we talked just a little bit about last time she was on my show. when we were discussing The Time Traveler's Wife and Midnight Mass. Kate's also going to recount the team's need to reshoot a big chunk of the show after Frank Langella was fired after a misconduct investigation and replaced with Bruce Greenwood, who does a spectacular job throughout this whole series, playing the patriarch of the family. She'll tell us about what it was like to film her death scene, coming up with her own backstory, and becoming friends with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross through their work on the score of this series. So it's all that and more. We're talking The Fall of the House of Usher. It's Kyle Meredith with Kate Siegel.
What's up, music people? And also listeners who are not into music.
just everyone. That's everyone, right?
Super inclusive. Super inclusive.
It's so great to see you. There was you did some work over the past year, and I'll go ahead and say that because now that we can, The Fall of the House of Usher, it's now on Netflix, and it was a little bit tough watching this. Going, I can't wait to talk about this show, but we can't do that yet. So
you can only imagine what the group chat was like. Just curse words as far as the eye could see, because there's so much to be said about it. And this group of people got along so well. All we wanted to do was go in a press store together and be chaotic in interviews. And unfortunately, the AMPTP wouldn't pay us the money that the actors served. So we had to go on strike.
So how did you keep yourself busy for, 188 days, something like that?
I started making really ridiculous Instagram reels and TikTok videos. I downloaded CapCut, and then I was like, I felt as if I was the first person to ever discover CapCut. And I was like, this is so fun. And I would just make random videos. And so I really increased my follower count, hopefully.
You kept us entertained, which was sort of like you found, like everybody sort of found a way, whoever wanted to, I guess, found a way, right? But like,
yeah.
I don't know if that's just an itch that you have to, like, what was that did you just need to still be?
Oh, yeah. If I'm not doing something like that, and if I'm not receiving a constant stream of attention from the general public, I'll just go into stasis like a sad hibernating bear. No, I think it's just there's a certain itch that gets scratched by self-tapes. It's not the best way to scratch an itch. It's like masturbation as opposed to sex. And it was gone. And so I had to do something. And I just, this is fun.
Now, do you get to put that back on the back burner now? Or are you going to?
Well, now I really like it. So I think I'll keep it up. I just like these things that come into my head, and like I make mocktails and I'll make videos. I don't know if it'll be as constant, but I think I fell in love again.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. It was fun to watch. But I can't, you know, I don't mind saying selfishly that I'm also happy that you're back to work and
like
everyone
back
is back
to work.
And we do. Let's talk about the show, because I feel like we waited so long for this one. And I know that there's a lot of story about why that happened, and maybe we'll get into that as well. But just to get into, so for the folks, I guess, who haven't seen it, The Fall of the House of Usher is not just about the one Edgar Allan Poe short story, but it's a love letter to many of his stories. And it's so much more. I mean, and I might have seen this elsewhere, but, you know, I did write down those words, expanding a story of privilege, wealth, and greed.
Yes.
And what it means today. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind just me throwing the big question at you, what does this show mean to you? What was it exactly beyond the obvious?
Yeah, I think The Fall of the House of Usher is about the necessity of pain, why we need pain in our lives, why we need struggle, why like pain emotionally and all that stuff. Because litigone, which is the drug it's all based on, its whole thing was, I'm going to eradicate pain. Like Roderick was like, and Madeline were like, we're going to have a pain-free world. And without pain and suffering, there is no compassion, empathy, or joy. You have a very neutral, bland, splenda existence of life, which you see through all of these Usher kids, especially the bastards who came in after the deal was made. And so for me, it was always about pain, the necessity of it, the forms of it, and how we process it.
It's sort of like people talk about you need death to appreciate life.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm more on the side of the vampires. If I had the chance, I think I would take it.
Honey, no, I'm not going to let you get away with that. Go down that path. Go down that path. You live forever. Nothing is lost to you. There is no sense of urgency. How quickly do you just spend 12 to 15 hours a day watching YouTube videos?
What, like, if vampires are real, you think that's a thing? Like, just the ones that are addicted to YouTube and TikTok?
Right? That's the thing. Like, if you told me I lived forever, there's no rush for me to do anything. I don't know. I just sit around all day and do shit. Like, I'm not going to build the pyramids. I'm not doing, like, the only thing that gets me going is a deadline.
We talk, my wife and I talk about this because she'll watch some of the vampire shows. You know, the ones that it's always, of course, the guys who have been around for a few hundred years and they hang around with high school students. And I think, why would you give a damn about any of this? Well, any of this, you know, it's.
Yeah, that's very funny. It's true. It's true. I choose not to hang out with high school students now, and I'm not immortal.
Right. Well, I do love the idea of the pain, because obviously pain's a big part of it. That one, I don't think that the way of structuring it that way was really obvious to me. But just seeing the way that everyone gets so tormented. I mean, from the beginning, we know that this isn't a happy ending.
Yeah.
Nor is it usually ever with Mike.
Probably not. No. Mike Flanagan is not giving you just everybody gets tickets to the Yankee game.
Does that change how you start in something like this? Like how you go into your character, like how anybody goes into a story like this, knowing that it's only going to end badly?
Well, this one was really fun because I was working on Time Travelers. I was working on something else. I can't remember when that followed the House of Usher writer's room came up. And I was in my office doing stuff, and Mike came in and he was like, "Hey, how do you feel about having your face ripped off by a monkey?" Spoilers. And I was like, "What?" And I was like, "You are so funny." Cause I wasn't familiar with the Rue Morgue. I was like high school level education Poe. And he was like, "The murders in the Rue Morgue is this very famous story. And it turns out the murderer was a chimpanzee." And I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" And so the thing that I did say, because I'm human, was I was like, then I have to be hot as fuck. If I die with my face being ripped off, then I want to be the hottest bitch around. And so in that way, yes, the performance of it, you know, Camille figures it out like a half second before it happens to her. But otherwise, I just create a character normally. But to me, that counterpose of knowing how the ghost was going to look, I just wanted to be so pretty.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Kate Siegel.
And it was such a really cool look. I mean, you had the silver hair. Yeah. What you might have talked about it on some of the Netflix promo that was done before the strike about how you found this character and what's the word? Because
it's Mirage from The Incredibles.
Thank you. That's what I was looking
Which,
for.
Which, by the way, I was an adult when I saw Jesus Christ getting dragged on Twitter as my least favorite thing. I would like to say that I already said it. It's awkward. I just said something and you can't go back and you're trying to make the interviewer laugh. And it's just like, ugh, God, people.
Now, when you say you based some of it, was that the look? I mean, I don't.
It was like, just the look.
Just the look, right? Because I can't imagine the characters from that.
No. Although there is something cartoonish about Camille, because Camille is splashy. She's only there for 3 episodes. She's only there to create the pattern, right? Once you know, you don't really know what's going on. Perry's melted, Maury's melted, and when it happens to Camille, that's when you go, oh, and when everybody else goes, oh, it looks like something's going on. And so I had the opportunity, because she doesn't have to carry a lot of exposition or a lot of like emotional like centering the way Aaron Green did. Aaron Green's entire job was to be still in the center of the storm. And I had to do that, and I couldn't make big moves and I couldn't make big choices. And it was to stand there at the intersection of Hamish and Sam and the sheriff and Zach and just stand still. Camille's the opposite. Camille got to be crazy. And so there's something cartoonish about her in the way she chooses to present herself, the way she dresses, the way she interacts with her assistants. But no, the look of Mirage, we knew it wanted to be blonde. And when Ashley came in with some different blondes, it wasn't quite working. It wasn't quite it. And then she had this blue Amazon wig and she just dropped it on my head. So the wig is actually blue.
Okay.
Yeah.
That must be like, what was the old thing? The dress color that we all debated a few years ago.
Oh, yes. Black and gold. No, but it's blue because Camille's whole vibe is silver. And all of that cool lighting, any yellow hair
would have not read on screen. So it needed to be a certain tone for camera. I guess if like she was a person, she's not, but if she was, her hair would be silver, but the wig itself was blue. I just thought that's fun.
That's just what my memory, it just flipped it right then. And so that's what just happened right there. When you and I last talked and we were all you could do is kind of give me little hints about this show. You mentioned Doja Cat.
Yes. Don't bite.
Yeah. As mm-hmm. this character. And you're like, just wait.
Yeah.
Now are you able to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so this vibe, like the vibe of that kind of like a little bit like icy, vipery, sexy, like I'm a thing, but I'm not a thing. I do a thing, but I don't do a thing. That was very much right at the base for me. Like that's the type of song I would listen to driving to set every day. These kind of like playful, violent women.
Had you all ever done anything like, I guess I'd say this sexual and sometimes hedonistic? It sounds strange, but...
Well, you can be judgy. The ushers are bad people. Like they're every single one of them is a bad person. They're not a good person. Well, I guess Lenore is a good person, but the rest of them are bad people. They're hedonistic. They are self-indulgent. They are self-obsessed. They are narcissistic. They're sociopathic. Like they're bad people. So no, we haven't done a show about bad people before.
Yeah. Like that had to be fun.
Oh my God. So there's this thing. When you sign a contract for a long-running series, they make you sign it for 7 years, or at least they used to before a new contract. Camille's the only one I would have done for 7 years.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Any reason why?
She's so much fun. She's a blast. Yeah. It's so much fun to play a bad person.
Now, you already mentioned it, you know, so she does, she dips out early. You have more scenes after that, of course.
I'm a ghost, yeah.
Yeah, because there's the ghost stuff. I guess what I'm getting to, maybe this is one of those questions, but like, how do you and Mike decide who you're going to play? I mean, how much do you come? It's like, oh, but she's gone early. I want to do someone late. Does that ever happen like that?
No, I trust Mike completely. And this sounds like lip service, but it's not. He tells me where he needs me and I go there. And it's because we try to keep the boundary very clean. So work, he's my boss. He's my boss, and that happens from call time to wrap. It happens during prep and things like that. At home, I'll like make nonsense stuff. Like he'll be writing a scene. I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if Camille wasn't dead at all and instead she was just there and she was getting a massage? Like things like that. Like those are just like goofy marriage stuff. But no, he tells me where to go, what to stand, what to say, you know, where to stand, not what to stand. Stand up is what he would say.
Yeah. So I don't know how much you want to say about this, but would it be accurate also to say that shit went down?
Dude, the most shit went down. People who are correctly praising Bruce need to remember that every single scene Bruce shot that wasn't sitting down across from Carl Lumley was an emergency reshoot. We redid almost all of his stuff. It's amazing what he did.
And seeing him, like you hear about, I don't know, those old, you know, stories. Like Tom Selleck auditioned for Indiana Jones. You're like, oh man, I love Tom Selleck, but thank God that didn't happen, you know? Like,
support
or whatever. This is one of those moments where I'm like, knowing, you know, what you know, everybody that was before this and with Bruce and everything, it's like, oh man, I think this is probably like, and I wasn't there, I don't know. But he is. He's fantastic in this and watching him work and everything, But, you know, what is it to be part of something like that and then just have it stop and not exactly fall apart? But I guess that was always
possible. It was heartbreaking. It was overwhelming and heartbreaking and disappointing. And you know, people were hurt. I was tangentially, I wasn't involved in any of the actual HR stuff. But hearing about it, knowing that cast members felt sad and uncomfortable and taken advantage of. By other members of the cast, other member of the cast. And it was just devastating because Mike has spent so much time building an amazing set life and experience and family. And to know that one person can come in and just fuck that shit up made me furious as well. And I think when Bruce came, there was palpable relief from everybody because we had a scene partner. And we had somebody we respected who respected us and a family member back. And I think it just, for me, solidified that feeling of you don't need to be tortured to be an artist. You can be a good person and show up and do your job, even if you're playing somebody extreme, even if you are in extreme situations, you are capable. Anybody is capable of being sane, pleasant, and professional on set.
and still bring out great art on top of it. Which,
yes,
same can be said. Bringing into the family, Mark Hamill is here now. Talk about playing despicable characters, but let me say this again. Mark Hamill is in this.
Mark Hamill! Honestly, like everybody, like Mark Hamill is a perfect example of you should meet your heroes. He's exactly as kind, respectful, charming, funny, everything you want him to be. Just chef's kiss, Mark Hamill.
Is there a story? How did that happen? I mean, who came up with the idea to cast him?
Oh, God. How did that happen? I have literally no idea. I'm sure I knew then and I don't know now. I'm so sorry.
No, he arrived and he's there. And that's the important.
He showed up. He astral projected himself there and then his body showed up and boom, pulled out a lightsaber and he's ours.
But, you know, and I could go down, I mean, and seeing Carla in all of her different personalities. I mean, again, there's just so much to be said about, you know, everything that happens in this.
And a dream to introduce Mary McDonnell to this world. Like, what an actress, like immediately fit in, immediately is just riveting and so much fun to have on set. Like we all had, like there were adults in the room. And so like poor me, Rahul, you know, Tania and Sam and Sorian, we're all just acting the fool. And the adults like wouldn't even sit in our green room. They had nothing to do with us.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Kate Siegel.
You know, I was thinking back last time we talked too, because we also talked about one of your iconic moments and at that point in Midnight Mass and the scream in the boat. And now to see your exit scene. And I will throw the spoiler at the beginning of this because we've already talked about some of it anyway. But with the ape at the end, it's a very different type of exit, especially your last words.
Yeah. Fuck it, I got mine.
Like, I guess in the way I would ask about, you know, how you, that scream in that boat and everything. Like, how did you go into that day? How did you go into that scene?
So that scene we shot in the middle of the night and there was nothing there. It was just me and Carla. All of the animals were added after the fact digitally. And we had Terry, who was our movement coach, who performed some of the chimps in Planet of the Apes. He was there teaching Carla her movement. And so he would get in the cage to kind of give me a sense of what was going to happen on the day. And I spoke very deeply with Michael Fimignari, who is my director for that episode, who I love with all of my heart. I've been working with 3 years. And we had talked a lot about Camille's bullshit detector. About Camille knowing that this world was full of shit and smoke and mirrors and her desperate need to know why she hated Vic so much. Like, this was just a question for her. Like, why do I hate my sister? And the moment of relief and understanding from Carla was almost a gift, right? That this is inevitable and this is going to be terrible. And how do we want to face death? And I just, it's one of the reasons I love Camille so much, because she didn't beg, she didn't flinch, but she got what she needed. And she was like, this is going to suck. Let's do it. And there's something so profound about that. And once I had that knowledge and love of the character's choice, I was able to drop in pretty quickly with the performance happening above me was deeply terrifying. Carla was at 100 at every take, even off camera. And I'm grateful for her for that, because it was just, there's no way to stop. Once Camille realizes what's happening, and she believes in crazy stuff. Like, we have a whole, Camille has a whole backstory that I made up because I had like months and months to sit and do nothing but journal. And once she figures out this is how it's going to go, it's how it's going to go.
The backstory, and like, I don't know how much stuff ends up, as they say, on the cutting room floor, you know, with a series like this, because there's so many stories. And one thing I always love about my storytelling is I always feel like every scene counts. Like it never feels like there's much filler at all. And when you have someone like that, when you have a story like this, I mean, are there big pieces that you have to leave behind, or is everything really constructed in there?
No, it's constructed. It's in the scripts. It's very few. Like, there are some little pieces of scenes that have been cut, but most of it stays. The backstory was more for me because, like we said, like, Camille's a splash. Like, she's short and spicy. I wanted to know in my head what the grounding force was. Like, there's this whole sobriety storyline with Camille that isn't scripted, that I just knew that Camille was sober up until the point she takes that edible at Leo's house. And that's when she relapses. And then that changes her choices until the end of her life. And so that was just important for me in terms of creating a short and exciting arc. Like, I needed something that turned everything. And of course, everything's turning around her as well. But there needed, I think, to be internal motivation for what happens at Leah's apartment, what then happens with my assistants, what then takes me to the room morgue, what then takes me past that security guard into the cages and not leaving that room. Why? And for me, it was because I needed something that tangible that I could react to. Was the breakdown of her sobriety. And so in the beginning, well, I say beginning, but like in episodes 1 and 2, you will see Camille like pour a drink and put it away from her, or like she'll won't touch the wine at dinner. But it's all that kind of stuff that as an actor gives you something to hold on to when crazy stuff is going on around you.
I cannot wait now to go back and see that, because I love that. That's great. I'll also put, just mention here, because the show opens up with another brick in the wall. With Pink Floyd.
Yes.
And I thought, how did they just not blow their budget right away?
So, I mean, not to mention like all the joy of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross that came in. Like, they've become friends of the family, and they're just like, oh, the music and Usher. And of course, the Newton brothers that we always have.
Yeah, Trent and Atticus, I own several of their scores, and every single time. I mean, first off, it's Trent Reznor, you know, and it's right. It's very jealous of that. Yet to have him on the series, Trent, if you're watching. I know you always are.
Always watching with bated breath. No, I mean, like, genius level genius, like touched by God genius. And like, I also believe Mike is a touched by God genius. And when they meet, it's like, they have a whole thing. And I'm just like, hi.
To be that fly, right? That's what you get to mean, to be that fly.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say what's next? Do you know what's next?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. Well, we just wrapped Life of Chuck, which is that Stephen King short story where it was an interim agreement project and it's finished now. And so that is now in post-production. It's fantastic. It is not horror. And so it's the first time that we've done a classic Spielberg-esque life-affirming story.
Wow. Cannot wait, as usual.
Yeah.
You never let us down, so... I expect that you'll be betting 1,000 forever. So
it's inevitable. Hopefully this will be.
Kate, it's so great to speak to you again and see you.
You
thank you so much for taking the time to do it.
No, thanks for a wonderful interview. Talk to you at the next one, I hope.
And my thanks to Kate Siegel. The Fall of the House of Usher is on Netflix now. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. And don't forget to head over to Apple Podcast. If you don't follow there, follow and then leave a review. Take a screenshot of that review and then drop it in the links in the notes of the episode section, and you might win some cool merch from Consequence. After that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of favorites from the 70s, 80s, 90s. You get the best in new music. There's bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. Again, that's 6 p.m. Eastern every weekday at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media sites. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you want another playlist, I have a playlist. This one's funnier too because it goes from Britney Spears to Encanto to Megan Thee Stallion to Frou Frou because Camille's insane.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. with new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.